It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Jules Gill, it's a week of news. It's fortnights of news, all sorts of things going on. Leaks, games coming out. Jim Ryan can't stand it anymore. He's out of here. He's running away.
Can I make a noise that expresses all of the news stories compiled into one?
Please do.
It's time to talk about the state of the industry because we have had a glut of great games. Baldur's Gate 3, get out of here. Resident Evil 4 expansion. Oh, you were nice. See you soon, pal. Cyberpunk's massive update. Can I have some more, sir? No, because we are here to talk about the breaking news on this Not News podcast because this is the UBP, the UBP, the UBP.
The UBP!
With Scott Telford and me, the egg, Jules Gill. And but there has been quite a lot of groundbreaking news recently. Did you see that Hyenas got cancelled this morning as well?
I did. Yeah, I was just talking to that with PC gamer Stevie Ward, who's been helping us out on the What Culture Gaming stuff. Legend. You can see her on some quizzes, some stuff that we shot in the coming weeks. But yeah, she messaged in that Hyenas has been cancelled. I wasn't following that game too much, but now, it's another extraction shooter.
We'll talk about this very quickly because obviously this is about the viewers sending in their questions, getting their voices heard, not just listen to us prowl on about all this stuff. But basically, Hyenas is the equivalent of letting somebody fart into your open mouth. It just is complete nothingness. They're like, listen, to all the devs out there, I feel sorry for you that you had to work on this. I'm sure it was a great game at some point. But when I saw it at Gamescom, I was like, wow, this is the biggest bit of bland I've ever seen.
No way.
Stop trying to push this. You're not Payday. And Payday doesn't even want to be Payday at the moment. So let's just chill the brakes on this one. And apparently they listened and they were just like, nah, this isn't going to work. We're out.
So, I have such a theory that, I mean, at the minute, I'm going to go wide with this and we'll just see how true this is over time. But I think every single, I'm just going to say it, pretty much every confirmed current live service game is not going to make it out or is going to die. Like Wild Hearts launched this year and died within about 8 months or whatever.
It's because I think we've discussed this before in the sense that when all of the live service models really took off, it was during the height of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So people were obviously at home more often than not and they were playing these games and checking in daily because they were trying to establish a new routine for their own mental health, just for their social aspects, for many reasons. Mm-hmm. So that's why those live service games really took off and people had more disposable income because they weren't going out to spend on games and in-game currencies and things like that. Mm-hmm. So take all of that and now remove that factor because people are back to work, whether or not COVID or not has been dealt with. Spoilers, it hasn't. So it's a case of now we're in that situation where we have all of these live service games that were developed during that time thinking that this is the gold rush time have now arrived at the town and it is a ghost one. It's just not a good time to be a live service game, yet the companies behind them are slow to react and they don't realize that the moment's already gone. It's already happened. It's already been and went.
And even then, I mean, the ones that were doing the rounds in the pandemic, it didn't really have, you know, microtransactions, monetary elements. It was Among Us that blew up. It was like, you know, people playing like Warzone or Battle Royale, like obviously Call of Duty sort of dove in and monetized that stuff. But I feel like the amount of different life service games that have since been greenlit, like Hyenas, obviously Suicide Squad is being currently being overhauled, but I doubt that's going to work. There's Square Enix are still doing their NFT game that they reckon is going to last for the next 5 years. I'll be amazed if that even sees the light of day.
Will Square Enix even last 5 years at this rate? I don't even understand this, man. It's like, so... What it is that I feel like we've needed this industry shakeup for a while. We've become languishing in this sort of like NFTs, quick money, fast. It's all just like there's no long-term goal. There's just short-term gain at the cost of a company's reputation. So with Jim Ryan stepping aside, I arguably would say he's been one of the worst Sony execs ever. And this is in my opinion. Yes. I can only go on what I've seen and what his company's been putting out. Mm-hmm. While there have been amazing first-party published titles, that does not reflect Sony as a company overall, and they have made some bafflingly strange decisions.
I tell you what's really
funny.
Their
insistence of using that Sony blog to get all of their news out instead of any actual structured news source is insane.
It was like there was a blog post updates. There's things at the PlayStation Portal. There's Jim Ryan's general sort of approach to PS Plus and backwards compatibility and legacy services. We're going to get there with the Jim Ryan stuff. I tell you what's really funny is that I made a whole video on ways that Sony are letting everyone down, the amount of potential they have if they would just hit these open goals that are right in front of them. That's going up today. We're recording this at about 11:45 on the 28th. That's going up at 2 p.m. And it was just funny because that thing was ready to go as of this morning. And then Jim Ryan stepping down. I talk a lot about Jim Ryan in that video. And it's almost like he sort of like knew it was coming. He's knew the amount of different comments. He's like, I'll get out of the way then.
He was teetering on the brink. And then he was like, oh, I feel like What Culture's going to do a little video on me. I'm stepping down. I'm not having it. Are you going to record a new intro just being like, hey, everyone. Like obviously Jim Ryan stepped down or announced that he stepped down from this.
I might double check my phrasing. Yeah, I remember because it was written by one of our writers, Jack Pooley. I adapted it and changed a few bits and pieces, but I thought he nailed the vast majority of it. So it's one of those things where most of it like massively holds up, and because of a lot of the things that assumedly Jim Ryan put in motion, like live service stuff, like Foam Stars, that Fair Games game, the general sort of push into mobile gaming live services and all that kind of stuff, it'll take whoever the next CEO is to get to either stop those projects, or I'm curious how much of that stuff stands the test of time and how much that was his idea or not, because you can kind of see the corpo executive 101 going like, live services are the thing, guys. Let's do mobile games. Let's do all this stuff. And then nobody actually wanted it.
It's a real shame because it's like you've got so many tantalizing IPs. And you know what? As much as people like ripping on Foam Stars for being a Splatoon ripoff, and it most definitely is, apparently it's very fun to play.
Yeah.
It's just the problem is that it's all just cynical, cash-driven decisions. And it's like we sound like a broken record at this point. It's just like, where is the originality? And when the originality does arrive, why is it not supported better?
Yeah, and it's just one of those things where like, I started talking in the office and me and Ewan were talking about movies that just feel like content or TV shows that feel like content.
Yeah.
Where someone's just pointed at a thing and gone, that'll probably break even, that'll do some numbers, let's do another one of them. Like they brought Frasier back, Expendables 4 didn't need to exist, just content all the time.
Do you know what it is? There's actually like within the movie industry, there is like this sort of this cycle, this wave formula, and I can't remember what the name of it is, but they talk about how we are now in this particular point that's reminiscent of the very early days of cinema, where people would take a punt on low effort, low cost projects because they think to themselves, well, one of these 10 films will make a profit and it will support the other 9 films, even if they absolutely suck. So they're basically just doing that with games nowadays. They're just like, whatever, like this will make X amount of money and that will support this here. But the problem is that as Square Enix is finding out, they put all of their eggs in the Final Fantasy 16 basket and thought that was going to carry their entire company out of the red. But the problem is that you haven't supported the rest of the company, so no, it's not going to work like that.
No, the Square Enix, the state of Square Enix, I know people have like dove into all those numbers and they are $2 billion down in terms of, I think it's like market value, but there's a whole thing
crazy
about ways you can read that stuff where it's like they're going to keep going for a little bit longer, but they're not anywhere near as strong as they could be considering the amount of things that they've put out. To focus in on Jim Ryan for a bit, we do have a lot of questions about him.
Yeah, apologies everyone. I've done my usual thing of just getting on the soapbox, having a little shout, and then I get tired.
Well, this is definitely what people want to talk about. The Jim Ryan stuff is breaking as of this morning, like I said, Thursday the 28th, and I only gave people about an hour to send questions in, so massive, massive thank you to everybody who responded.
Legends.
They're all legends. You're all legends. So we had a question from JWT who says, name one good thing and one bad thing about Jim Ryan's tenure as CEO of Sony PlayStation. For them, he sold a hell of a lot of units with the PlayStation 4, which was a great console. The bad is his stance on backwards compatibility. I think the good thing... Oh, go on.
The backwards compatibility thing, I know that's a very contentious issue, but I actually... I was with him on that one. I didn't think that the console should have featured backwards compatibility things, because the only way you push technology forward is by actually cutting ties and saying, look, we can't support this architecture because it requires discs, for example. We want to move into a purely like digital format, or we want to expand in some ways that just cannot operate with the prior tech. And I think that that is important to do. True. However, the way that they did it, which was like, oh, we've marketed our entire operation on being for the gamers and you can't even play half these games anymore, and we're going to bring back the games from the PS4 on the PS5 with a huge price increase, that was stinky. It's like, I think it was the right and wrong way to do it.
Yeah, when it gets brought up with his general stance on backwards compatibility, that sort of blows over with his general stance on legacy content and PS1 games and stuff like that. And I know that he like said he was ostensibly misquoted, or his emphasis was taken in the wrong way, where he was, you know, shown the original Gran Turismo and he apparently said, oh, who would ever want to play that? And he was just saying what he meant apparently was that he wanted to focus on the future and everything else.
Yeah.
But you have this history, you have this legacy, you have these old consoles. Why is there not a PlayStation 2 app or a PS1 app on the PS5?
It blows my mind that you'd have somebody come out and say something like that, albeit if he is misquoted, still the tone is still the same, that we should be moving forward. Then why did you release your PS5 with a game entitled that was solely focused around the PlayStation's legacy and that Astrobot thing? It was literally it was just saying, hey, look how great we were.
Remember this?
So what if you put that onto your future? That was a very baffling move. Great experience, though.
That's the thing, and it's like, I feel like his general stance on PlayStation's own history has just been like, no one cares about that. And I get the the CEO mindset of like, you're inheriting, you're taking over this sort of tech company, and tech doesn't look backwards. Like, tech as an industry, as a medium, tends to be whatever the latest unit is. Maybe you have a phone from a few years ago, but you're not going to go that far back. And once you apply that to gaming, wrongly, you would then go, oh, well, no one cares about this game. But at the same time,
I think that my the sort of best and worst thing that he'd done, it would be like a summed up with the PlayStation VR2 headset.
Right.
That's probably the encapsulation of it, because like that tech is amazing. Like there's no shred. Like, you cannot argue with it. It's fantastic to play. It feels great to use as well, and it is just remarkable what they managed to get out of that hardware. But the problem is the pricing, the lack of support, and any game that is attached to it was just like never made to be felt like they were a priority. Mm-hmm. So everyone's just been like, it is a thing that exists that is good that is not supported. Hello, PS Vita.
Which is, yeah, exactly. Which is kind of like the ties in with your saying about the blog post announcements and the general idea of like, if you want to get the most out of PlayStation or see what other irons they've got in the fire, you've got to go looking for them, try and find the blog post, try and find the update on what's happening. Obviously, one of the most recent things, which is under his tenure, is the increase in PlayStation Plus pricing as well. Like, it's going up in October. Yeah. I wonder if that'll get rolled back. I assume not. But yeah, in terms of trying to think of a good thing, I mean, he's been good for shareholders. Like, it's one of those things where he's so, to me, he's a very boring dude.
He's made people a lot of money.
Yes, he's made people money. I mean, he's, I assume, would be the person behind the overall green lighting of remaking The Last of Us 1, remaking Horizon Forbidden West, Horizon Zero Dawn, doing these sort of like almost more recent remakes to try and sort of revolve them around as the PlayStation Studio stuff comes into the fore, which is maybe another thing if you like the PlayStation Studio stuff. Like, you've got the Uncharted movie, you've got a push into the Ghost of Tsushima movie, God of War TV show, like, I guess. Like, we're sort of waiting to see what those are like, but I can see him having that vision. Like, why not go wider and have all these tie-in things and then put a new version of the game out and everything else? So that's good if you only care about the monies, but I've kind of always been... I thought he paled in comparison to the previous generation, the PlayStation 4 era, the Sean Layden era, where it's like you had someone who felt more like a gamer, just felt someone who was actually playing stuff and wanted to greenlight the right projects and didn't just want to sell you a PlayStation Portal for whatever £200 or whatever the hell it is, where it's just a tablet with a controller glued on the side of it, stuff like that. I think the bad thing is that he hasn't been a face. Like, he wasn't a face for the company in a good way. Whenever he popped up, it was like, all right, what are you gonna say now? Like, you're probably gonna say something that's corpo or whatever.
That's a good point, actually. Yeah, you dreaded his appearances because you thought that they would always come with an associated and were charging you more.
Yeah, and it's like, whereas I loved seeing like the various, like, I've always liked seeing Phil Spencer. I believe that he cares about what he's doing. I think he's all over the place at the minute, but at least he cares and he's coming from the right place, whereas Jim Ryan was a businessman through and through.
Look at Nintendo. Any time that they get any of their CEOs or execs out there, it's just like, oh, it's so amazing, because it's like, I know that you're associated with a certain arm of Nintendo or a certain brand or a certain franchise, and I'm excited to see you because I know that your passion is going to be the thing that you're going to sell me on, effectively.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, I wish they would have have someone as big as like Reggie Fils-Aimé. Like they got Doug Bowser in, who's really, really solid. But they've got a few other people presenting the Nintendo Directs and stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's one of those things where the Jim Ryan era, I think, will be remembered for inflating the bottom line at the cost of authenticity on the gamer front. It just felt like it was a business. When he was in charge, it was a business-ass business. And there's only so far that that'll curry favor with me personally.
In a totally cynical way, you could say that his entire run was finding out how much you were willing to put up with and how much you would be willing to pay.
Yep.
Because what he's done is he's stoked the fires of conversation between gamers, but at the end of the day, we're still consuming from this company, and we're still doing so at a higher price.
Mm-hmm. And I like that there's a lot of comparisons between PlayStation and Apple in terms of like they're like this luxury brand, and you go to them for this luxury experience, and you expect the higher price tag and everything else. But there was just something a bit soul emptying about like, we're going to remake The Horizon, and we're going to remake The Last of Us, and we're going to rely on this stuff. Yeah. And like the Sony formula stuff really came into the fore across the last few years because of how much had taken off across the PlayStation 4 era. So yeah, there is that. Jarvis messaged in, who was the person who got us on stage last year, so massive shout out to Sadie Jarvis. Who would you like to see take over Jim Ryan's place? For them, it has to be Herman Holst. I don't know who you give this to. I mean, there's some people shouting out Sean Layden to get him back. I mean, I liked his comments where he was talking about how unsustainable the amounts of money being put into these first-party projects is, and how he would prefer a wider amount of titles rather than throwing half a few hundred million at a certain genre over and over again. But I don't know who you give it to. Someone who actually plays games would be nice.
I was about to say, maybe you don't look for like the executive. Maybe you look, oh, I'll tell you what, it would be funny to have Peter Molyneux. It really would. It would be so funny because you would be getting like promises that would just be so out of whack. But who was, I can't remember the name, and it's going to annoy me that it's so obvious. Who was the creative lead of the Grand?
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Theft Auto series. Who left?
Well, there was Dan Houser was the guy you're probably trying to think
Dan
of.
Dan Houser.
The writer.
Dan Houser. Imagine having somebody like that at the helm, where it was like a pure creative, undeniably strange.
Right.
And completely off the wall, but leading the Sony flagship, as it were, there.
I don't know who the hell you get, because the thing is, I don't know all the executives as anywhere near as much as I know the devs and the studios and everything.
But
else.
I think that's what you need. I feel like we need like a celebrity air quotes face to be there to lead the ship and be like, look, you had a completely corpo person before. Now I'm 100% personality driven, and you know the quality of games that I or my team makes. So let's use that as the impetus to support us, you know?
Yeah. I just they used to have like I'm blanking on the name of the dude. You might be able to remember there was an actor they hired to be a fake CEO for a while. And he was marketing the motion control things. I'm blanking on his name. He was blonde. He was really, really good at it.
Okay.
And he would come out and he would be this like fake blowhard CEO guy. And he was all like, I love gaming and we all love gaming. And he was really, really fun. Kevin Butler, I think he was called.
Okay, right, yeah.
And he was really, really effective. But that was like a whole specific era of Sony that was just coming off all the hubris of the late 2000s when they were all like, you'll get two jobs to pay for the PS3 and everything. And they sort of came back around on the PlayStation 4. But yeah, I just need something that's kind of enigmatic, charismatic, like worth watching, not just someone telling you about what business moves they've just made and, you know, transactions you've got coming your way.
So with Games Workshop, the guys who are behind Warhammer, every year they bring out, or actually maybe it's like more than once a year, they bring out a guy called James Workshop, who is like a fake character that they've got.
That's horrible, but genius.
It's amazing because he's he's completely like, how's best to describe him? He's kind of like Charlie Brooker, like super sardonic,
right.
Really, really like clever, dry wit, and delivers it with like a really bombastic approach. And he comes out over Christmas to basically tell you that this is the time to get your Christmas orders in if you want them delivered by Christmas. But they do so in such crazy, silly ways that it grows and grows and grows each year that people look forward to that event more than anything else that they would be announcing in that time period. And it's like, that surely is the type of energy we should be trying to cultivate. Like the Nintendo Directs, the thing where you just go, oh, I've seen this person's face and I'm immediately excited.
Yeah, and I think speaking of things like the direction, the state of plays, they've had such a rocky reception. Like they're either really solid and you'll get something you didn't expect, or they're completely flat and they just feel like the shareholder updates that they ostensibly are. Like they need to have that oh my god, a reveal trailer of this thing or whatever, or people just wonder why the hell they're turning up for it.
I remember it was like maybe 2018 or 2019, back when I was still up in Newcastle, and we stayed up to watch one of the state of plays together. I think it was like the first ones like that we ever did like a live stream
right
for.
Right,
and as soon as it finished you were like, state of this more like, and it was just like...
That's kind of been the case for the last like few years of them. It's rare that they get one that knocks it out the park. But question from Paul McSull. This is a bit of a gear change, bit of a switch here. What is the one true proper condiment for fries or chips, if we prefer, and why is it salt and vinegar? Now, I think they've broken their own question.
So fries are different to chips, because like chips are like chip shop chips, big thick wedges. And salt and vinegar on them, absolute godsend. That is the only combination that I will accept. But when it comes to fries, like your French fries or your American potato
your
lengths, or whatever you call them, I would say that like tomato ketchup, even that is a completely risky one because you've got to choose the right tomato ketchup for it. Do you want to go for a relish instead? Are you a mad head that has mayo like all the Swedish people out there?
I was going to say mayo.
They love mayo out there, and it's also an absolute banger. Do you go fancier? Do you go for a sriracha sauce? Do you go for a sriracha mayo? Like, where do you really go?
Sriracha mayo is a great shout. Anything that's a little bit of a hot sauce, once you've got the taste for it, is pretty, pretty good.
What if you went KFC, right? And because they have the worst chips out of any fast food place. I'm just saying they do.
No. Did you see their Twitter admin agreeing that the chips are terrible? And he was like, I'm going to go and talk to the big man and see if I can get some sorted. He's like, yeah, hashtag pray for admin or something. I like KFC's chips. I don't want to be a contrarian, but I think they're quite good. I think they go nicely with the fried. It's a nice juxtaposition with crunchy fried chicken.
Yeah, they're just nothingness. They're just like
they're quite squishy.
Big flakes of nothingness. And I think that, but the gravy, if you had chicken gravy with your chips, then you are winning because gravy is just hands down amazing.
The KFC gravy is pretty good. I'm going to go with mayo, but I agree that there's a distinction between chips and fries.
Yeah.
If we're going chips, we're doing proper English chip shop chips, then it is salt and vinegar.
This might even be an Americanized question, and chips might actually be crisps. They might be asking for that.
So who's putting condiments on a bag of crisps, though? That's the real question.
Have you heard of nachos, my friend?
Is a nacho a crisp? I guess it is.
Nacho is definitely a crisp. It's a tortilla chip.
Yeah.
And it is crisp.
I guess
to the texture and
this is like
crunch.
Is a bowl of cereal or soup? Like if you go down the route of categorization.
It's annoying that because gazpacho comes along and ruins any suggestion of it has to be hot to do that. And you're like, oh, come on.
Yeah, or like a hot dog is like a sideways burger, or a burger is a sandwich. There was a whole thing where people got carried away with
this. Because every food boils down into three categories, doesn't it? Like pie, cake, burger or something like that. It was liquid. Crazy. I remember just like, what is going on?
Question from Jack Jingle, who says, any memories of guides that you used to get with game magazines? Remember having a metallic purple Pokemon guide Ooh. For Red, Blue, Yellow from official Nintendo and a little postcard-sized paperback for Final Fantasy VII from a PlayStation publication? Yes, I used to collect these. I used to have stacks and stacks and stacks of guides that I just never got to. This is hilarious, and I've never mentioned this in public. I used to read those books when I was, you should read more, because I used to play games so much as a kid. Yeah. And I would always do like doctor's checkups, GP stuff. And they were, what are you up to? What are you doing? And I would always reel off all the games that I'm playing. And they would be like, do you not want to read more? Because you should read more. And so I would just pick up these little guides and just read what was happening in Resident Evil, even though I'm not actually playing through the game. That was, and pretending that they were stories or whatever, just getting through my backlog.
I too collected the guides, but I remember particularly there was a mini book that came with another publication that gave a guide, part one of a 4 or 5 part series for Final Fantasy VII. And I remember reading that, just being absolutely blown away, because I'd played Final Fantasy VII by this point. I believe I was probably on like disc 2 or 3, very far into the mix, as it were. But then this was telling me about all these secrets that I never even thought about. It's like telling me that I should steal some stuff from this guy. I should go and do this boss first. I should go and do here. I should get this materia. And I was just like, this is completely changing the way that I play the game now. Mm-hmm. So I obviously went back and started it all again. And I learned right there the importance of guides. Like, it wasn't necessarily as fun as an experience of finding out for yourself, but it was so satisfying to be so over-leveled by the time that I got to certain things.
The thing is with Seven, I remember, because I used to hang out and play Final Fantasy VII with a couple of different friends and their older brother. And I always remember we would come home from school and the older brother would have got to the next story bit, and we would sit down and he'd tell us what was going on and whatever. And we had our own saves as well. But I remember him showing us the Knights of the Round summon.
Yeah.
And he'd spent all day doing the breeding thing or whatever it was to get there, the chocobo.
Yeah, the
stuff.
Golden chocobo.
Yeah, which me personally, I've never done that. I've never spent the time and got it myself. I've only seen it be used. And then I remember I had an Exploder cheat cartridge for the PS1 that unlocked it.
Classic.
So I was just like, you know, a little criminal that I was, using that to use the summon. But like something like that, who the hell stumbled upon that the first time? Surely that always came from an official guide that was distributed or something.
Because I always think that there must be something that's like the first person does it using the guide and tells other people, and then they get swept up into the public consciousness enough that they think that it was discovered naturally, but it actually wasn't.
I just can't imagine doing that much time and getting that summon. It would blow your mind, like if you somehow stumbled upon that combination of things.
A great example is Final Fantasy XII. Do you remember the Zodiac Spear?
Yeah.
I believe that's what it was called. It was the Zodiac Spear. It was like one where you could only get this like amazing weapon if you didn't open a certain chest at some point in the game. And it was quite early on. And then you had to do a ton of other like different quests. And eventually you'd get to another place and then you'd be able to unlock this special weapon. Now, there is no way somebody went through the game, saw that chest and thought, I won't open that. Like, why would you think that?
That's the thing, all those inverted ones where it's like, oh, actually don't talk to that character, or don't finish this quest and it unlocks something later. Like that's either secrets in the code that people have hacked into, or it is from an official guide that was distributed at the time or something.
Or there was one where it was like Steiner from Final Fantasy IX. You could get his like ultimate weapon if you got to the final boss in under 6 hours or something crazy. And it's like, no one would do this naturally. No one would do, like, I know that there are speedrunners out there, but it required you to ignore a ton of stuff for him in order to get this one weapon. So it's like, nah, I'm not believing that you got this naturally.
We just had that in it was like rarest RPG weapons ever or something, because I didn't even know that was in there. And I love Final Fantasy IX. That was something that Jess put together. But stuff like that, where it's like, it's a miracle if you happen to find it.
But what I thought is what if developers, because remember, like when they've got anti-piracy stuff, they'll chuck a few they'll chuck a few codes for their games or leaks of their games onto these download sites that have the anti-piracy software built into them. They do it on purpose so that the pirates download them, they get annoyed by it, but they enjoy the game maybe, so they go out and buy it. It's to try and like sort of like curb it a little bit. I'm wondering if message boards back in the day, they were just like, the devs would go on there under a different pseudonym and say, hey, look what I found. Can you believe that you can breed the chocobo and like get to the Knights of the Round? And somebody must have been like, wait, what? You can do that? And be like, oh, yeah. And then they just disappear. That was the one the little nugget of information.
Just plant seeds and run away and then see what they grow into.
I'd love to find proof of this, because it would explain so much, for example. But it would be such a good like list fodder as well to just talk about I know that we've done like times that the devs had to solve problems for you, but yes, this like telling you the secret, but under a different guise would have been so good.
I think, yeah, we've done quite a lot of things where it's like stuff that was genuinely impossible. Like it's just, yeah, I mean, it's obviously we're focusing on Knights of the Round, but there are all sorts of specific unlocks and stuff that just aren't remotely natural into how you're actually playing it. Might be different in the Final Fantasy VII Remake. Maybe they'll point you more towards it. Because I guess at this point, Knights of the Round is more known at this point.
They've made it a big thing, haven't they? Because obviously in the gameplay trailer, they show Cloud riding a golden chocobo, don't they?
Yes,
I believe they do.
Oh, they show the racing stuff as well.
Yeah, so they're clearly being like, hey, look, the mini games are back and they are going to have a big impact.
Because Knights of the Round is such an over-the-top, massive, long summon that if you're going to do a full new version of that in 2024 or whatever, that's going to have to be this mini CG cutscene thing. Like, I don't know how the hell they even attempt to do it.
It's funny because I'm actually doing a list right now today on Final Fantasy VII's mini games. You know the 3D battler where you go and do like a little boxing simulator?
Yeah.
Did you know that there is a 0.? Hold on, it is a 0.89% that you will win the fourth battle because the computer reads every input that you do and only will occasionally just go, oh, I'll let you have this one.
Right, okay. Because that whole thing, I never finished that. I'm sure there's a trophy for it on the re-release of the PS1 one on the PlayStation where you can actually, if you do beat all the mini games, you get a trophy.
It's crazy.
But as a kid, I never got through that. The same with the snowboarding one. It was like, I never
That's
managed
really
to get the high school.
That's really difficult, actually.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to them doing weird new versions of that stuff.
Yeah.
Question from Jack Asbury, who says, out of all the millions of games out at the minute, which one is currently living rent-free in your head the most?
Oh, that's a tough one because I don't know if I've told you this, I've been playing a lot of Armored Core 6, right?
Yeah!
But I have been bouncing off of it recently. I find it's a very fun game to play, but I'm finding it way too easy.
It is very easy, until it's not.
Yeah, to the point where I'm just like not enjoying it. I don't know why I'm winning, and all of these like upgrades and stuff. People are like, "Oh yeah, you should be like changing your rig every single sortie that you go on." Mm-hmm. And I'm like, "Okay, fair enough." But the problem is that I've not been challenged enough to want to try changing everything else, and I've just been getting through the exact same way. I've just been like, get to the enemy, weaken, smash all the buttons, done. And it's just like, okay.
So I was in the exact same headspace as you. It's I don't know if you fought, there's a couple of bosses that tend to humble players. Forget the name of one of them, but it's a big floating enemy and it sort of sends out like waves of missiles and stuff. That thing is quite hard to fight and that took me a lot of tries. But I was in the same place as you. I was like, this is really, really easy. Why do I need to change my loadout? It's all working pretty smoothly. Yeah. And then I hit certain bosses where I was like, oh, I'm actually going to respec and, you know, try like a defensive build or try like a more melee build or whatever. And it was further in where I sort of got it. But I think in general, it's quite an easy game until it's not. You get big spikes
They're not fun. I don't enjoy it when games do that because you don't actually come out the other side feeling that you've learned anything. You just go, well, I just learned how to beat that boss. Like my skills overall haven't improved. Mm-hmm. But I've been playing that a lot. I wouldn't say that it's living rent-free. Bomb Rush Cyberpunk is still living rent-free because I finished that. Mm-hmm. I was tempted to go back for the 100%, but I've not done that yet. And I've been playing through the Resident Evil 2 remake again to get ready for the Ada expansion.
Oh, shout out for Separate Ways.
Yeah, and that game lives rent-free in my head anyway, but Resident Evil 2, I mean Resident Evil 4, because of the fact it's just very, very fun.
Yeah, man. I think for me, at the minute, it's Baldur's Gate, but I'm sort of, I'm juggling Baldur's Gate in Mortal Kombat because I'm like, it's new Mortal Kombat. I love MK. We've actually got a competition coming up, which a little sneak peek of that thing. It's still being ironed out, but we're going to have a competition on the channel very soon, so keep your eyes peeled for that. And we're giving something away, but I can't reveal what it is just yet. But you'll see. Maybe it's Mortal Kombat themed. And so there's that. So I'm playing a lot of MK1, and then I'm also still going through Baldur's Gate 3. I'm like 50 hours in Baldur's Gate.
Nice.
And I'm like, maybe it's not that much. Maybe it's about 30. But either way, I'm right on the cusp of Act 2. But that game is just infinitely huge. Like, you can play it for days and feel like you've not really gone anywhere. But at the same time, you've seen so much stuff. So it's definitely MK and Baldur's Gate for me. And I did get a code for... have you heard of Trepang? Trepang 2?
No, I've not heard about that.
Did you ever play the Fear games back on the 360?
Yes, I did play that. Yeah.
So like the Fear games have like no one's really done like slow motion, you know, like SWAT team horror stuff since then. But there's this game coming out called Trepang 2, named after the studio Trepang. And it's literally just doing another Fear game. So it's like, it's kind of, well, it's more action based than horror, but it plays like the old Fear games
do. That sounds amazing.
And it's lush. Like, so I've got that. And so I'm playing a little bit of that. I'm going to try and put like a review together or some sort of talking point thing on it because it's just going to get avoided or missed this year. But yeah, my mind is always about three or four games that I'm juggling at any given time anyway. But for the most part, it's Baldur's Gate. But yeah, overall, massive thank you to everybody for sending in your various questions and
thank
stuff.
You.
We will check back in next week. This has been the UBP, the UBP.
The UBP.
I've been Scott Taylor, but that's been Jules Gill.
Indeed, it has. And remember, you can go follow Scott over at /LP89, where he'll be putting out the call for questions next week, baby.
Hells yes. We'll let you know if Jules is appearing or if I have another fancy guest instead. But for now, a massive thank you to everybody, and we'll catch you then. Goodbye.
Bye, everyone.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.